we had a community board meeting. I did report briefly on that, and I did talk a little bit with Lisa about it, although a lot of our focus last week was just about COVID prep when I talked to her. But you've picked up on a few things. Do you want to start off with this bit about the bus passengers dropping 50% in the last quarter of 2021?
Yeah, right. It's maybe not surprising, because that's when COVID came back into the country.
Yeah.
So that's a reflection of that, so that presumably it's dropped even more since then. The first lockdown had a major effect on passengers on buses, and, well, in fact, on traffic in general. Road traffic dropped, and air traffic dropped, everything dropped. But so the figure overall for the Waikato is 42%, but Raglan seems to be a bit more sensitive, with having about 50%. So 50%. So it does seem to have had the bonus that the buses are running more on time, because they've got fewer passengers and less traffic in the way.
Most businesses and organisations are much easier to run if there's actually no customers, John.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a basic rule.
So there's only just over half of the buses now that running more than 5 minutes late.
How many used to?
Used to be about 10% more than that, so.
Okay, it's made a bit of a difference. Hey, well, just while we're talking about buses, remind people, that is that app still available where you can find out where the bus is on your phone? Or?
Yep, no, it still works fine. And the buses are still running the way they always have in Raglan. If you're connecting in Hamilton, there's more of a problem. Some of the Hamilton buses, they've now got two-hour gaps, which isn't as bad as the gaps in the Raglan bus, but still a lot more than the half hourly that they used to operate.
Right. Okay, so that's... Do you know what? I actually don't think the buses will be so down at the moment, because a lot of it is work and school. Actually, it's probably going down now that people are starting to isolate. But, I'll take that back. It will have an effect.
Well, these figures always come out quite a bit later. So these are the figures up to the end of 2021. And we're now in the couple of months have gone since then. So... be interesting to see what the next quarter brings in the way of figures. But.
Was there any permanent, like if you look at, we had lockdowns in 2020, and then you've probably seen the figures after that when life just got totally back to normal. Did it make a permanent change in the way people use the buses, or just went back to the normal proportion of people using the buses?
It still hadn't recovered. It was gradually increasing. So I think people were gradually gaining more confidence that COVID wasn't around and wasn't dangerous to travel on a bus or generally be in contact with people.
I wonder if people were put off a bit by the fact that you need to wear a mask on the bus. I'm sure that made a bit of a difference to some people.
Yeah, because now you need to wear masks for anything indoors, so maybe the effect on buses would be rather less. So I don't know. As I say, it's going to be interesting to see. And the long-term effect's also going to be interesting, whether more people end up cycling or walking or driving or whatever.
Mm. And we also have, I know a few backpackers used to arrive on the bus as well, so that would have a little reduction in that too, well, for the whole last 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they've stopped running the long-distance trains, because they relied on the foreign tourists.
Right. Yep. So, John, if that's enough of the buses, did you enjoy the cyclone? Did any trees get knocked down at your place?
Some fairly big branches, but apart from that, they came along the day after and cleared up most of them. Further along the road, there was quite a big bough came off the Hutakawa.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them down that street, yeah.
That damaged the chimney and blocked the driveway.
Right, a little bit of damage.
And, of course, there's the tree that fell on a car, but it seems that, fortunately, the driver managed to walk out of it.
Yes, I've heard that the story around the traps is that if they'd had a passenger, it might have been a different story, and someone in the passenger seat would have been severely impacted. So, thankfully, that didn't happen.
And there seem to have been signs that were bent or blown over, or I noticed that one out of the four beacons down on the sand dunes had been knocked off.
Right. Who's responsible for that? I guess that's a council, is it?
That's a regional council job to look after the navigation aids.
Do they even know it's blown over?
I imagine somebody's reported it, but I've not. I did report some of the things that happened in the Wainui Bush Park, and I haven't checked whether they've got on to doing those. I know they've had a huge number of trees and such like damaged during that cyclone. So
okay.
I haven't had a report on how they're getting on with catching up with that work. But,
so just but, losing branches and things? Did any get knocked right over?
Yeah, there were some trees and some big... I think most of what I've seen is just big boughs which have been broken off.
Yeah.
There must have been a weak point in the tree somewhere, and rather than the whole tree going, and one of the big branches has come off.
So are all the pathways passable?
Yes, but some more difficult than others. On the Kaitoki walkway, there's quite a few trees down along there. And almost a week ago, went through, and it was a bit awkward in one place, but it was really relatively easy to get through. But, you wouldn't want to take a bike through there, which some people sometimes do, but walking is okay.
Have you noticed, like at our place, we've got all the trees, their leaves are burnt on the side facing the wind direction. I'm guessing, no expert, that it's the salt spray was, and the strength of the wind was the reason for that.
Yeah, I've not noticed that. It probably depends on the tree. The Pahutukawas seem to have stood up quite well, but they've lost quite a few of their leaves.
Yeah, I bet.
Every tree's lost lots of its leaves. My lawn was covered in them. And at one stage during the cyclone, it looked like a leaf storm. We occasionally see snowstorms, but this was more like leaves blowing
leaf storm.
Coming down rather than snow. So.
At your place, yeah. All right, well, that's so nothing very substantial. It was a bit of fun for a lot of people. Most people got out, drove around to have a look at it, I think. Uh-huh. But what else have we got, John, today that you want to talk about?
Well, as you say, there was the community board meeting last Wednesday. so there was a report about that on the Raglan Community Radio website. So hopefully people have seen that. If not, go and have a look at it, because it covers quite a lot of the things that were mentioned or discussed at the community board meeting. One of the things that I thought was interesting was that the chair of the community board mentioned that they had had a pre-meeting, but then said that it was not a secret meeting. But then I've tried to find out what happened at it, and I've still not managed to find out. So it depends what your definition of secret is as to whether it was a secret meeting.
Well, if she's saying it happened, it's not a secret, but there's probably no minutes. You know what, John, I know you're troubled by this, but I'm not. I think whatever you like, human beings need to spend time together to talk and discuss things. And like, I know some councils that every meeting is minuted and recorded, and I know that means that a lot of things will happen in private conversations, one-on-one and things like that. It's not like there's a lot of power for our community board to be abused.
Yeah, well, it did seem odd that at the board meeting, all that happened about the airfield was they read out a statement from the council and then didn't discuss it. And I would have thought something which is a relatively major issue in Raglan at the moment, the community board would have discussed what was happening and what the latest developments were, and where they saw it going.
True. They could have. I suspect they feel like it's out of their hands, because they've made their recommendation. Their recommendation was ignored by the staff. What do you do now?
Would have been good to hear that discussion, which presumably happened at this pre-meeting.
I do know that happened. No, it happened earlier. Like, it was mentioned at a previous community board meeting last year. They stated that their message to council was to do something different than what council did. I can't remember the details, so I'm being a little bit vague about it, but it was publicly stated at that previous meeting. And there was quite a discussion, long discussion.
The council is still spending lots of money on it with security and security cameras and taking people to court and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, taking people to court for breaking council property, that's probably not that surprising. The thing that frustrates me is like I observed council managers saying at a community board meeting that they first, when they first looked at, no, when they first had to make the decision about the fence, they said, we looked at just closing the runway. And they said, but we couldn't do that because you can't do that right away. You have to give a long period of notice. And then people have probably heard my discussion when, well, it came up that to put the fence, they had to have a long period of notice as well. That's to the people flying so they don't come and land at the wrong time. But beyond that, now the airfield is actually closed. So if it was true that they were looking at closing the airfield and it's now closed, they could just leave it closed. But it appears that they're doubling down on their decision to build the fence and might be going to repair the fence and rebuild it.
But then there's no guarantee that it's going to stay repaired if the way that it's gone up till now is anything to go by.
It'd be a pretty poor bet to bet that they wouldn't get cut again.
But I'm interested you say that people have been taken to court for damaging the fence.
No, you said, I thought you said that.
Well, no, they've been taken to court for being there.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my apologies then. I actually created some news that doesn't exist.
Okay, as far as I know, a couple of people have been taken to court for trespassing on the airfield. And one case was dismissed and the other one would have been dismissed if there'd been, if the person who was accused hadn't asked for it to go to a full hearing.
So there we go. So I was about to say something about the more the council tries to fight this, the more fight they'll get back. And that's a classic example of someone saying, oh, you want to go to court? Okay, let's do it. Let's make a bigger deal out of this as possible. I think they should just close the airfield and walk away. We all know that eventually the airfield's going to be closed. We know what the mechanisms are to do it now. Council managers have even said they would like to close it. If they're just in it for the fight now, and I don't know, it's tough. Like they've been, you know, abused and criticised, and they'll be feeling very frustrated at council. But they should put all those feelings aside and just what's the thing that needs to happen now, and just head in that direction. I think.
Yep. Which makes it odd that it wasn't discussed like that at the community board.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that they feel like it's out of their hands, and it is because they made their recommendation to the council managers and the council managers didn't follow it. So, yeah, there you go. And you know that Chris at least would have had something to say.
He didn't say anything at the meeting, so that's why I'm thinking that there was probably a discussion at the pre-meeting and they talked about the things we just discussed and maybe did decide it was a waste of time, but it'd be good to hear in public that they came to that conclusion and that they feel that, yeah, it is an important topic, but they feel that they can't make any progress with it because council's not listening.
Yeah, and I didn't ask that question in my interview with Lisa. I had a lot to get through, unfortunately, on Friday, so we didn't ever get to that one. All right, so let's say we know what we know and we don't know what we don't know there.
It would also be interesting to know who else wanted to be vice chair of the community board.
No one else. Well, no one else stood. So they didn't have to vote. The only nomination was for Dennis Amor to be the, and he is now the new deputy chair.
Yeah, but what was discussed at the pre-meeting, we don't know. Because looking at the body language, I thought some people didn't look that comfortable about it.
I didn't see that, but I couldn't get on. I was trying to look at it on YouTube. But I'm not going to do things about reading into body language. And
maybe my reading of body language is wrong, so I invite other people to have a look at it and come up with their version of it. But, and not knowing what happened at the pre-meeting leads to speculation like that.
Let's put cards on the table here, folks. There is no meeting of that nature where someone's been voted in, where people haven't talked about what's going to happen before they get to the meeting, right? That's just would be naive and unrealistic of us to expect that everyone turns up to the meeting and has an open discussion about who's going to be the deputy chair, who's going to be the chair, and all that sort of thing. They already know when they turn up. Every single community board and council, that is the case.
Because the problem is that we're going to be asked to vote later in the year in October, and without knowing who supports what or who said what, then it makes it that much more difficult to vote. And in my view, it's that that's one of the reasons why the voting numbers have gradually been going down, so that whereas 20 years ago we had about half the people of Raglan voting in local elections, we've now only got about a third of people voting, and at the last by-election it was even lower than that.
By-elections are lower, aren't they, normally?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay.
It was also mentioned that the food waste consultation was coming up on the 2nd of March.
Yes, indeed.
We now know from the council's agenda that they're going to ask us for $72.90 for an extra targeted rate, which compares with the... Like, it's better value than they were asking for last time, by about $7, but... it's still rather more than they estimated it would cost last time, also by about $7. So be interesting to see whether there's actually any workings behind that $72.90, or whether it's just to take it or leave it, and whether people are going to, again, say leave it if they don't know how it's been calculated.
So I have it from people at Extreme that it's much better organised this time. Last time we went through this targeted rate debate in the community, the council, I think they have four staff working in the waste area in council, and two of them had left. And instead of going back to Extreme to get some accurate information, they used an estimate that was months old to determine what that would be, and it later emerged. And in fact, council even voted on a lower figure at the subcommittee meeting where they decided not... What did they decide not to do? They decided not to... What did they decide? Not to fund the food waste. That's what they decided about 3 years ago, isn't it? And then the community funded it.
They're still claiming that only 40% said they were willing to pay. But only 40% said they were willing to pay that figure, which should never have been put in front of people anyway.
No. Yeah, you're right, John. For folks who don't remember the details, there were two questions asked. There was a very, very badly done survey. There were two questions asked: do you like it? And another one: would you like to pay $80 for it, or $79, whatever it was? And so people, like, they took the option. They said, oh, I don't want to pay that much, but I do want the service, which is an inconclusive amount. The mayor went public and said, well, we've asked the community and they've said they don't want it, and we've listened, and it was nonsense, and the figure was wrong. People from Extreme Waste were telling me behind the scenes that the figure was wrong for weeks, but they actually were gagged by the council. That's how bad it got. They haven't been gagged this time, John. You'll be pleased to know.
So they can tell us how the $72.90 is made up then?
Yeah. And I'll be interviewing people about it in due course, shall we say. I haven't booked anything yet.
Uh-huh. So it still seems to me odd that we have to pay targeted rates for things like that, but things like roads and other things which you could also target, we don't pay targeted rates for?
Yeah, it's the council not quite knowing what to do with Raglan, I think, but the whole country is moving to food waste pickups, and you go to Hamilton now, you can see little buckets that look like our green buckets, same design, and I understand, I think, that the whole of our district will be going to that as well in a year or so. So this is just a targeted rate for 1 year. Hopefully that's all it takes to get through to just a standard service being rolled out across the district that comes out of wherever the rest of the food, rest of the waste rate comes from.
Yeah, it just seems to me that they keep putting targeted rates on the towns, and that the country areas don't get these targeted rates, even though they benefit, because the main benefit is surely in things like reducing landfill and reducing methane emissions.
Yeah, but you know that the... I mean, we had people in Raglan saying, oh, why do I don't use the food waste service, so why do I have to pay for it? You can guarantee that people in the rural areas will have an even stronger feeling about that.
Yeah,
and their councillors will hear about it, no doubt.
It's a general benefit, so it could be argued that the government ought to be paying for it.
Oh, I know, I agree, but that's what people are saying, you know.
Yeah. Seems to be an awful banging going on next year, is that?
Oh, you're the only person who can hear that.
Okay.
Yeah, because folks, people, John is listening to me via Zoom on a microphone that's one of those ones that picks up everything in the background. So you just heard someone going into the town hall, but our listeners can't hear that so easily unless they like really slam the door. then they might pick it up over my voice mic.
Okay, that's good. One of the other problems we had with the last community board was that you gave me a ring and said, how do I get onto the Zoom link? And it was explained at the meeting that the Zoom link was changed at the last minute.
Oh, no, it wasn't the Zoom. It was YouTube. I didn't bother trying to get on the Zoom. I was just trying to get on YouTube, and it was about 5 minutes late. Well, unless there were problems at my end, like you can't really tell. But I got in just as they were announcing that Dennis Amor had become the deputy chair.
Because the good thing that came out of that discussion was that they said the link can now be on the Facebook page of the Raglan Community Board. So,
yeah, actually, they did have quite a discussion about that, and Gabriel had been wary for some reason, I can't remember, about publicising it, but the rest of the, others in the board were like, no, we want to do it, and she was like, yeah, I agree, and the staff said, no, you can do it, there's no issues, so, yeah, that will happen from now on. People can join the Zoom meeting.
One of the things I didn't really follow was that they were talking about paying $17,000 a year for a special Zoom license that would allow more control over that and get around the problems of publicising it. But,
I think Gabrielle felt rude, like kicking people off the Zoom meeting when like the open anyone could join the Zoom meeting for the open forum for the first half hour, and then just like in a normal meeting, once you're in the gallery and the official meeting starts, you can't just stand up and say anything you like. And Gabrielle felt rude kicking people off, and the staff member explained there are Zoom facilities where you can just mute them politely, but they cost $17,000 for the license for the council. But John, I can actually mute you now, I think.
Yeah, well, that's my puzzle. Maybe you've already muted me, but...
Oh, I'm going to try it now. Keep talking. There we go. Now, John, you'll have to unmute. There we go. You'll have to unmute yourself. That's weird. Now I've got... Okay, there we go. He's back. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. So it does work, which is what puzzles me. We haven't paid $17,000 a year, as far as I know, for the radio Zoom license.
We pay $20 a month.
Okay, a bit different, $17,000 a year.
Well, maybe they use... I don't know. Maybe they're different. They're a different size organisation, let's face it. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's the story. And the good news, though, is that the Zoom... meeting, which no one attended for the public forum and the meeting last week, will be more publicly available for people. Henceforth.
So we've also got the district plan coming up, which is in deadline. I think the deadline's been changed because originally I had it noted down as the 2nd of March, and now the website says it's the 1st of March as the deadline. So
folks, when John says the district plan coming up, this is the district plan has been written and it has it been approved, and now we can appeal. Is that it?
Well, those who put in submissions can appeal, which is quite a number of people, because at the time lots of people were concerned about the new development on the corner of Wainui Road and Stewart Street. Those new townhouses that have gone in there.
Yes.
And therefore, quite a lot of people did put in submissions, so probably quite a few are listening to this.
So we need to check, and I haven't done this, something, because I remember during the planning meetings, was it Kainga Ora was submitting, in fact, it seemed like something that was definitely going to go in, that you couldn't build big monolithic buildings like that now. That you have to see, you might have seen buildings in Hamilton where they're quite big, but they've got lots of vertical shape to them. So every unit inside is expressed on the outside with a different material. So it doesn't just look like one single colour monolithic lump like we've got around the corner there. That you've got human scale to it, I guess, is the best way to put it. I thought those rules are going in. I haven't checked to see if they've gone in. John, have you?
Yeah, because I've not found them. But as we've discussed before, the district plan does run to over 1,000 pages. So I think that's why we were all struggling. I realised this week that I'd managed to not notice what was in the list of trees, the protected trees, because, again, quite a few of us put in submissions asking for more trees to be protected, but in fact there are only 65 trees in the whole of the Raglan Woods. It includes a rimu out on the near the corner of Cogswell Road and State Highway 23.
Yeah.
It includes Pururi down, well down Wainui Road, and another on Whanga Road, and then of course the palm trees in the centre of town, and maybe rather more controversially, the Norfolk pines in the centre of town.
Really? Nasty trees.
Well, some people think that and some people like them. But they're on this list as part of the 65 trees that are being protected. But it seems to me that we've got thousands of trees around, maybe even, I've no idea how many there are, but could be even hundreds of thousands in the ward, and yet only 65.
What about, John, what about the Pohutukawa along Cliff Street, and also there's one near Orca, and the ones in the median in the middle of town opposite Trade Aid? Are they protected?
Most of those are, yes. Though, of course, council did manage to cut down one of the protected trees about 5 years ago, but, and didn't realise it was listed at the time. So I think council needs to improve their procedures on that, or maybe they already have done in the light of that.
Hopefully, yeah.
So it seems to me that there were an awful lot more trees that could have been asked for. In fact, were asked for, but weren't accepted in submission.
So did you talk to that? Did you talk to the commissioners about that when you submitted?
I only talked to the commissioners about the character of Raglan, which is maybe something else we can get on to talking about retaining that.
Did you choose not to talk about everything you submitted on, or was it just not possible? Were you only given 10 minutes for everything you had to say?
Yeah, well, it seemed to me to be a very complex process, and as we discovered with the character of Raglan, we put a lot of work into it, and then it didn't end up with an awful lot. So there are some improvements in it. So we've now got protection for some of the views, but it's not clear how those are going to be protected when it comes to individual planning applications, because my experience of the way the council applies them is that the rules exist, then they waive the rules. Although it says that the views should be protected, I suspect that one by one they're going to disappear.
Until someone lodges in some kind of objection.
Usually these are done without any notification, so that the planning consents go through, and it's only after the consent's gone through that there's a notice formally given to the policy committee telling them that the staff have approved something, which is how those houses on the corner of Wainui Road and Stuart Street got approved.
So, John, could someone in that situation, if you had truckloads of money, could you sue the council for not following their own rules? Is that the remedy at that point in time?
Yeah, you could probably get a judicial review to look at the way council was operating it. But as you say, that needs pots of money, which the developers usually have, which gives them an inbuilt advantage in these sort of things, because they can appeal against refusals, whereas council, if it does accept things, usually nobody objects, or doesn't object to the extent of getting it reversed.
So the plan, I guess, and that's something that puts the planners on notice to be careful around that issue. And so, I mean, some other way of putting, I don't say put them on notice because that sounds like they're in trouble, just some way of making sure the planners understand that it's the view shafts here are important to the community, important to people who have houses here. Yeah. I don't know what that mechanism would be or how you'd do that, but yeah.
Because the wording of some of this is quite good. It talks about framing views towards the harbour, having traditional roof forms, having verandas, recessed shop fronts, rear access. One of the things I've got doubts about is the bit that says reinforcing the street corners by ensuring the design is two-story and transparent on both sides of the street corner. Seems to me that the main street corner we've got is where you've got Harbour View Hotel, which is two-story on one side, but then it's offset by single-story buildings on the other side.
Yeah. I guess no one's going to move those. I mean, you'd get lynched if you suggested you wanted to remove those buildings.
One of them is not protected, so the oldest one of the lot, which is the shack, built about 1902, which is about 3 years before the Harbour View Hotel and about 20 years before Wilds, isn't protected.
It wasn't a particularly ornate building, so if the people at the time would have been surprised that you'd want to protect it, but we do have a new perspective now, 100 years later. And
I think it's part of the character of Raglan.
It is, yeah.
And to build a two-story modern building, and if you wanted to put the Chronicle building on that corner, then I think it would change the character of the street.
You're trying to frighten people now, John.
There's nothing in the plan to stop that.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though. If you did that in Raglan, you'd get lynched. You would, wouldn't you? Let's face it.
Well, I think you'd still get permission to build it, rather like they've got permission to build the ones we've just been talking about on the corner of Wainui and Stewart. And people, as far as I know, haven't been lynched for doing that. But
no, but that's different. Like that was a kind of a semi-empty site. I think like this is. If I owned that site, I'd be really wary about doing anything to change it. I think there'd be there would definitely be more pushback on that.
Yeah, but if it goes through without any public notification, which it can do because it's within the new rules that we're discussing, then it's too late to do anything about it. It's like that development, as I say, the townhouses that they went through without any public discussion.
I guess it depends who owns it. If someone local owns that site, then I think they would know better.
Yeah, but there's no reason why they shouldn't sell it to somebody who isn't local, which is what happened with those townhouses. So they were owned by a local person who sold it to somebody who lives near Narawahia.
Yeah. It is a different location. Like that's the absolute heart of the town, the physical town. But John, did you or someone else submit that it should be a protected building?
Yes. The submission was that the street corners should remain single story and the buildings on them should be protected.
Okay. From an architectural point of view, I'm more than comfortable with a two-story. Like I understand the reasoning for a two-story building on a corner. And the way it frames the exterior spaces around it, but I do agree with you that that building should be protected to stop the scenario you're talking about to stop that from happening.
Well, I'm saying that there's nothing to stop them putting a Chronicle type building on that corner instead of a shack if these rules go ahead.
Well, but that's the rules are like that now though as well, aren't they? That building's not protected, and right now, well, on the old plan, there's nothing to stop that from happening either.
No, we could say that we're lucky so far that it hasn't happened. But yeah.
Okay. All right. Are you going to object to that?
I'm still working out what to object to, but yes. One of the things that strikes me is that there's been very little feedback because. We've had these things since just after Christmas, and so far most people have, well, everyone that I know has just kept quiet. There hasn't been any feedback to me anyway on what people think about these proposals.
Do they know they've happened? Like we haven't, like to be fair, we haven't made a lot of noise ourselves about it.
We've discussed it each time since Christmas when we've talked, which we had January off, which makes it an awkward time. To get these things out, which in itself seems to me not a good way of doing things, to bring these things out when everyone's busy doing other things. But and as I say, we've now got a week to go, and certainly I'm not aware of what the rest of the town thinks about these things.
Did anyone else submit the same as you that building should be protected?
Yeah, quite. I think there were about half a dozen or more submissions along the same lines.
Mm. And the objection process is just a matter of filling in a form, basically?
Yes.
Okay, and then...
Available online.
Yeah. then the staff decide whether they do something with it. How long? It's been such a drawn out process, folks. This process has taken 3 years at least. How much longer is it going to take for them to come back with a decision?
Well, if people put in appeals on it, then those appeals will get discussed. They'll probably go to a mediation process at some stage, which is going to happen within the next couple of years. And then if mediation isn't successful, we'll then go to the Environment Court. So that will probably take about 4 years altogether.
Oh, my God.
So we're still some way off, but it does depend on whether people accept what's being proposed or whether they do put in appeals. And if it's not appealed, then it will get approved as the operative plan in a very short time.
So should we be objecting to the fact that they didn't do anything about a special character area for Raglan to protect Raglan's special character?
Yeah, well, as I say, there are these statements in which sound quite good, but it's how they're applied that seems to me to be the problem. And I think the proposal that we had agreed, but which was then thrown out by senior management at council planning, seems to be a way forward on that. So maybe we need to pull that one out again and put it back to them and say, you know, it needs some way of actually putting all these great ideas into actual practical operation when it comes to the day-to-day planning decisions that are being made.
Well, it was severely watered down by senior staff who told the younger staff who were working with us to put this section together. They were basically told to gut it, would be my description. And we just got a quick notice near the end saying, can you approve this? And I looked at it and I realised that it had been severely changed. But even what was put in, which was so watered down as to be almost useless, that the commissioner still didn't approve that anyway.
Yeah, Well, they came up with this version, which is their version of doing it. So some of the things I think they've tried to condense, and in some ways it works, but the version that they got put to them didn't have any way of actually working on how an application is processed to apply these rules.
So so will these rules stop Raglan turning into Mount Maunganui, which is what everyone fears?
Well, we've still got the height limit, so it's still 10 metres in the town centre and 7.2 everywhere else.
Okay, so it says to protect and enhance the character of existing buildings through new built form being sympathetic to the existing Main Street built form. So this is, like, we were looking to protect more of Raglan, not just the Main Street. So is this just about the Main Street?
Well, some of it is, and some of it covers a wider area. So in that the view shafts include all the main road approach and protecting the view of the harbour, the coast and Mount Perioi. But then it says as far as practicable, which is one of the problems. And it's also changing the building back from the current 6 metres, which is largely ignored by the planners because they keep giving exemptions to it, down to 3 metres, which itself will change the character in some streets. Some streets, it wouldn't matter if there was a 3 metre setback, but some streets it does. And at the previous round of the district plan, the Environment Court said the council ought to look at it street by street and come up with proposals on that basis, and they've not done that. They've just come up with an overall 3 metres.
I mean, this is the thing of a community not really having a lot of control over what happens in its own community when it comes back to, and like, it's not like there's a conspiracy at council and amongst the commissioners who are hired by council to defraud us of what we desire. It's just that the bureaucracy is so thick to wade through that you end up with these watered down things where they kind of throw us a bit of meat and then don't really do anything for real, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. It's an issue, and I still don't know to what extent people want to keep Raglan as it is and to what extent they want to see it become rather like the Mount.
Oh, people still react violently at any change, to any change at all in town, even changing car parks around, as we discovered in the last 12 months again, causes those problems. But, John, there is something I did want to talk about that I discovered, because affordable housing was an issue. The Whangaroa Raglan Affordable Housing Project submitted through Fiona McNabb about affordable housing, and we actually got it in this thing. John and I were talking about a group of us submitting about the Raglan character, and that affordability was a key component of how this community developed. You look at all the funny little houses around the place, that's the character of Raglan. And affordability, they appeared to work very hard. From our perspective, it felt like they were working very hard to make sure the word affordable did not appear in the district plan. So I was immensely surprised last week when I went on to YouTube, and I must be the only person in the world that gets prompted videos from Waikato District Council, but they prompted a video that was an affordable housing workshop that the council was having. So most of the councillors and the mayor and some planners, and also Simon Perry turned up on it at one point as well. And I just got in on the ends, and the mayor and everyone was saying, all the things they were saying sounded like they were taking the affordable housing issue and the housing crisis very, very seriously. I still don't think the mayor gets how bad it is, the figures he was giving, but he does get that it's happening, that it's an issue, and that something needs to be done. And I was immensely surprised given the experience we'd had, John.
Yeah, because as you say, it doesn't appear once in 1,000 pages of the district plan, the word affordable.
No.
But there are a few references to a mix of housing, but then it's not made clear, as far as I can find, how you achieve that mix of housing.
So I think in the end, the thing that made me, I was trying to work out why did we get that, and then now suddenly they're taking it seriously, and I realised Simon Perry with the Perry Foundation and the Perry Company, group of companies, I think they're a group of companies, anyway. So a rich, influential, powerful person is taking the issue seriously. So now the conservative people on our council, our councillors and mayor, are also taking it seriously. I think that is probably the thing that's tipped it over the into this new approach. Well, there's new thoughts that they're having anyway.
Yeah, because I can't see that they've taken up any of the suggestions that we made, like a proportion of new development should be affordable, or that there should be high-density developments in some parts of towns which would provide for lower-cost housing.
They were aware, I can't remember which councillor said, but they were aware that the planners might be a little frustrated that they were suddenly talking about this stuff when the district plan had just been finalised. But a crisis is a crisis, right?
Well, the crisis has been with us for over a decade now. It's just gradually getting worse. Yeah, it's rather like climate change. We've got a crisis which is gradually getting worse.
I think the housing crisis is getting worse at a faster rate. But one thing I do want to talk about was interesting, what Simon Perry was talking about. And like, I mean, I don't know much about him, but the Perry Foundation is a charitable organisation. I think it's called the Perry Foundation. You can apply for grants, and they like to do good works. And what they've actually done is they've bought a piece of land which is vaguely somewhere in the rural area around Cambridge, I'm not sure where. And what they want to do is build buildings with, they're kind of like, you know what the buildings are like in the UK where you've got a row of houses, so they share a common wall, but they've got their own little bit of lawn out the back. Kind of like that, but it won't look like those buildings in England. And their trust will, or the overseeing body will own the land underneath. And so people will be able to buy houses, but they'll just be paying for the house. They won't have to pay for the land. So that'll mean, for example, a house that would normally cost $730,000, something like that, over $700,000. If you're just buying the house without paying for the land, that was going to cost $320,000, I believe.
So they'll pay rent for the land instead, will they?
I'm not sure about the details, but it's a system they've worked out, and I think this is what's been done in Queenstown. I think that's where they got it from, a system for getting people into home ownership. So it's not a big solution to the whole housing crisis, but it is a solution that they're working on. And what they also do is, like, they build this development with a whole lot of houses on it, and some of them they sell on the open market, which funds it. And then once the people have bought the buildings, they have enough money to go and then buy another piece of land and start the process again. So this is what's been discussed, and it sounds, I mean, that's a good thing to be doing, I think. But the main thing for me is that because someone rich is taking the issue, rich and powerful is taking the issue seriously, now all of the councillors and a council are taking it seriously.
Yeah, but and does it just apply to land that they've used for gravel extraction, or does it apply to areas in Raglan as well?
I don't know, John. I don't know. One of the councillors did ask a question about, well, there wouldn't be much parking, and there was they allowed something like 1.7 on average 1.7 cars per house, which is possibly not enough. And one of the more conservative councillors was a bit worried about that. And that brings up the whole issue of how we design our towns, because as we know in Europe, they're trying to design their cities now, break them into little areas where the distance to walk across them is about 20 minutes. And within that area, you've got all the services you need, like, well, probably not a post office these days, but, you know, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, all those sorts of things. So that, just putting a greenfield development out of town somewhere is going to make it very reliant on cars. I don't know when our council is going to be ready for a discussion about how we design our towns and cities, though.
Yeah, because I think the whole of a planning system from top to the bottom has got that problem. I was just looking at a proposal to carry on building the four-lane Waikato Expressway southwards down to Fiereri, which they're planning to do in 2027. And there seems to be no discussion of climate change or agriculture production or anything in any of these things. So it seems that in some respects we're still back in the 20th century, but we've got increasing 21st century problems that we've just been discussing, like housing affordability and climate change, and somehow the system needs to develop, and some parts of this plan seem to recognise this, but other parts don't. And talking about climate change, one of the problems is that the government put back the legislation that was going to allow district plans to consider climate change, that they consider climate change in terms of sea level rise. So they're looking at a 4-metre line around the harbour, where they're going to need to put special consideration and consider whether the houses are movable and things like that.
So mitigation strategies you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not talking about reducing climate change at all through the district plan. Because the legislation that was supposed to go through and start in December has now been put off till at least November. So that is going to still be, to my mind, a 20th century part of a plan in a 21st century plan.
Yeah, the momentum for the established way of doing things is very strong, and it's not until you get a recognised crisis that they actually make changes, and that just seems to be the way it goes. And I get, like, you know, the commissioner's job is to make sure that the district plan functions properly and there's no surprises and nothing that's going to cause legal action. So their job is to keep the status quo, basically, and make everything function properly. And there is an argument for making sure that the council functions properly, but we've got a housing crisis and things aren't functioning properly. So, yeah, that's where we are.
Anyway, by the time we talk next, the deadline will be over and we'll see how many people have put in appeals and whether any progress is going to be made on discussions or whether this is where we are.
So if someone out there has suddenly remembered, I think I did make a submission, but it was so long ago they can't really remember much about it. John, can they just go to the District Council website and fight their way through there?
Yeah, it's the usual thing of look for the Waikato District Council website. Up at the top right-hand side, it's got a line of things you can do, and to the left of those is Say It. And in the Say It section, if you click on that, then that takes you to a district plan and the appeals on that. So that's where the easiest way of finding it.
Okay. All right. And are you on the air tonight?
Yep. 6 till 7:30. I haven't decided whether I'm coming into the studio or not, but it's quite easy sitting at home doing radio. Much easier than walking or cycling into a studio. I might opt for that.
But will you be looking more at the district plan at all, or just a range of issues?
Yeah, I'll probably look at some of the things we just talked about. As you say, the interview you did with Lisa was an interesting one, so probably replay that for those who haven't heard it. But most of these issues have got quite a few aspects to them, so we've covered a lot of them this morning, but we'll probably cover more this evening as well.
Okay. All right, John, well, thank you for zooming into us this morning, and enjoy the rest of the day. And we'll talk to you again in, as we said before, a couple of weeks on the show.
Good. Thank you. Bye.
All right, folks, that's the end of the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. And I love talking about bureaucracy, don't you? It's such a life-enhancing, just gives you such a good feeling. Anyway, enough with the sarcasm. It was the end of the show for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.